Good evening. Our program tonight is intended to honor the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. There are few individuals that have done more to change the social fabric of America in the post-World War II era. The speech we're about to hear, delivered on August 28, 1963, was a watershed moment in the civil rights era, but it didn't occur in a vacuum. It was the culmination of a decades-long struggle which began in 1890 when the Senate successfully filibustered the Lodge Bill, which proposed federal regulations of elections to the U.S. House of Representatives, effectively ending efforts to enforce federal civil rights in the South. The separate but equal doctrine, affirmed by Plessy versus Ferguson in 1896, concluded that racial segregation did not violate the 14th Amendment if the separate facilities were equal. This gave rise to the infamous Jim Crow laws, which in practice did not result in equality at all. It wasn't until 1954 in Brown versus Board of Education that the court overturned separate but equal, but despite no longer having official sanction, segregation continued. 18 months later, on December 1, 1955, Rosa Parks was arrested for refusing to give up her seat to a white passenger on a city bus in Montgomery, Alabama. A bus boycott began December 5th under the leadership of 25-year-old Pastor Martin Luther King and continued for more than a year until the courts affirmed that segregated seating was in fact unconstitutional. On Christmas Day 1956, members of the Ku Klux Klan attempted to assassinate Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth, former president of the Alabama NAACP, which had been outlawed by the state of Alabama. He joined Martin Luther King and 58 other black pastors to form the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in Atlanta on January 10th. Shuttlesworth and his wife were attacked by Klansmen the following summer while attempting to enroll their children in the Birmingham public schools. The police were nowhere to be seen, and he was left to drive both himself and his wife to the hospital with serious injuries. Jumping forward, Dr. King and other civil rights leaders were arrested in April 1963 during the Birmingham campaign for organizing public protests which openly violated laws they considered unjust. His open letter from Birmingham jail, dated April 16, written in response to the urging of white pastors to pursue legal means for social change, is considered one of the most important documents by a political prisoner in modern history. 2 months later, Medgar Evers, field secretary of the NAACP in Mississippi and prominent civil rights activist, was shot outside his home on June 12 by a member of the White Citizens Council. He was taken to a local hospital and denied entry because of his race. After his family explained who he was, he became the first black man admitted to an all-white hospital in Mississippi, where he died an hour later. These are just a few of the events in the long struggle leading up to the address we are about to listen to. Following this speech, the following events occurred. On June 6th, John F. Kennedy urged the guarantee of civil rights to every American, regardless of race, creed, color, or national origin. He was assassinated in Dallas on November 22nd. On July 2, 1964, the Civil Rights Act was signed into law by President Johnson. On February 21, 1965, Malcolm X was assassinated. On March 7, 1965, the first march from Selma to Montgomery, led by John Lewis and others, became known as Bloody Sunday after marchers were assaulted after crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma. The march finally occurred on the third attempt, March 25th, escorted by the Alabama National Guard under federal control, the FBI, and U.S. Marshals after Governor Wallace refused to protect the marchers. On August 6th, Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act of 1965. 2.5 years later, on April 4th, 1968, Dr. King was assassinated. On June 5th, 1968, Robert Kennedy was assassinated. Between May 12 and June 24, 1968, the Poor People's Campaign, a 3,000-person encampment in Washington, D.C., was conducted under the leadership of Ralph Abernathy following King's assassination to bring attention to the fact that despite the passage of the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Acts, the material conditions of a significant number of the poor of all races failed to improve. And these efforts continue to this day. Dirk, would you please play the speech? People on Zoom, did you hear what Malia said? No?
Yeah,
Malia is passing out pencil and paper for you to jot down any notes or anything that comes to mind during the speech for use during our breakout discussions.
Great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today, signed the Emancipation Proclamation. To end the long night of their captivity. 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hoped that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights, the whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people. The warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice, in the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must be able to conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. As we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our body is heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the city. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, no, we are not satisfied and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I'm not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution. And staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. Yes. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day, yes, this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope, and this is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
Okay, so we'd like to just sit for a short period of time, 3 minutes. Dora Lee will ring the bell to start and end, and just a chance for people to kind of absorb the speech. And if you like and would like to jot down anything, any notes or anything that comes up for you, please feel free to do so. So we'll be breaking up into groups in a couple of minutes to talk, but first we wanted to just kind of acknowledge how difficult it is to talk about racism, how sort of awkward and uncomfortable and painful and shameful and confusing it can be. And so as we talk and listen to each other, you know, we encourage you to be generous with yourself and with others. We thought we'd divide up into groups of three, including folks online, if that's possible. And each person will have about 3 minutes to talk and be heard. And then when you hear the bell, please move on to the next person. If we would like for each group to designate one person as a reporter, and so that when we reconvene, that we can maybe share some of the thoughts that were exchanged. And so we had kind of a couple of prompts that you might or might not want to use. One is to kind of share some of the notes that you jotted down. A second one is just, is the question, how does this speech apply to your life now? And the third, what is this speech really about? So I think we're going to have like 10 minutes for breakout groups. So if we can just circle up into groups of three, that would be good. Spread out throughout the room. Yeah.
It's interesting. Two of us remember the era well, having grown up in the Jim Crow era. Another younger comment, he's probably the age of Dr. King's kids. But his power as an orator, it's good to be reminded of that. What the speech was about, I think the speech was about reconciliation, speaking to his audience, to the black people who had every right to be extremely resentful, that we have to be bigger than that. Looking forward to black girls and black boys holding hands with white boys and white girls, the aim of getting beyond it all somehow. And I think what struck us is now at this point in time, the reprisal of overt racism. The striking down of the Voting Rights Act, look at the gerrymandering going on, it keeps going.
Hi there. So we were talking about the speech, Kara Bryant and I, and there's a couple of spots here, kind of in a similar vein. We got caught a little bit in the timeline of it all. 1963 is 63 years ago from 2026, and about a quarter of the time that the United States has been around. Once we kind of dabbled in that, it's sort of like the speech itself is very good, but listening back to it in 2026, we had some of the similar questions, very similar stuff to like the gerrymandering and everything else. Was like, is it just less apparent? You know, like there's obviously strides, there's movements. You know, we're not seeing segregated buses, but are we seeing kind of the malicious nature of racism elsewhere? And I really like this part that, you know, or here's the big quote, is life is difficult enough without the racism. And that really tickled me. So we wrote it down, and that was Kara. But we've got a lot of similar thoughts here, is like, how have the chains of racism and structural racism, how have those changed? You know, are we seeing any of that? And then it's hard not to be angry at some of this stuff. And it's hard to not feel hopeless and disempowered. And, you know, we were talking about the Buddha nature of infinite love and compassion. It's like, that's for everybody. And it is. And it's trickier in some instance than others. Did I miss anything? No? Okay. That's pretty much where we landed.
I'll go there and ours is, I think, you know, you said about the timeline, we were talking about the kind of historical, where that falls on the historical timeline too. And, you know, Clem, with your introduction of the list of things, you know, where that kind of placed it. And, In our group, I think there was it sounds similar to every group, but that there was this kind of dueling force of, you know, the message of hope and freedom and not letting go of that, you know, despite the worst of situations, with a lot of despair about where we are now and, you know, real disgust over, how this could be 63 years ago and that, you know, we have, I think the phrase that was used was the possibility that we squandered our opportunity to be a great nation. And is that, you know, have we squandered that opportunity in a finite way, or is there still hope to be had to move forward? There's a question, you know, kind of a maybe an unanswerable question that was posed of, how do you know if you're free, and what happens when you realize that freedom can be taken away, as we see happening now in Minnesota and kind of all across our country. But yeah, just an overall feeling of anger and sadness, and you know, it's hard to believe that all of this happened and then that we're in this situation that we're in now. So...
We can't hear you.
Yeah, we can.
Do one of the Zoom groups want to share?
I can if our group wants me to. I don't know if anybody wants me to.
Sorry.
We want you to.
Okay. Our group was Millard, Dell, and me. And
we can't hear you quite yet, but we're working on it.
Oh, you can't hear me. Okay.
Here we go.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Go ahead.
Can you? I'm so sorry. Can you start over?
Over again. No worries. Thanks, Malia. Okay. So our group was Dell, Millard, and me, and we came at it. How much time do I have? First of all, like 1 minute.
Couple
minutes. Okay, I'll try and be quick. Dell started out by giving us some data about how bad things are in terms of economics for people of, actually, I think it was Black versus white people. And I don't know if I got it down wrong, but basically at one point, it was for every $1 a white person made, Black people were making 67 cents or something. And then now they're making 62 cents. And so that was sort of just a context really for the, you know, the data. But I think in terms of what I got from it, and forgive me, you guys, because my brain is on, you know, space cadet time. But essentially what I got from this was the speech started with a discussion about justice. You know, justice will roll down, must roll down like water. And then basically, you know, it's going to happen, you know, justice is going to happen. And then, you know, let us not wallow in the valley of despair. And then all men are created equal. I have a dream. And he does the whole, I have a dream thing. And then he goes from this justice base to then this freedom base. Let freedom ring, you know, from every mountainside. And, you know, ending with the Negro spiritual, free at last, thank God, free at last. And so it, despite how shitty everything is, there is this incredible hope and, you know, vision of freedom. So I thought personally, you know, I think his, you know, we all read his words with incredible sadness at the state we're in. But this is an incredibly hopeful speech if you look at it, or at least the way I'm looking at it. So anyway, that was my 2 cents worth. And Millard, I think I've probably butchered whatever you were trying to say.
No, you did a fabulous job.
Okay, that's it for group two. Thank you.
Thank you, group two. Shalema?
Good evening, group. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
You hear me? You can hear me. In 1968,
yes, we can hear you.
Okay. can you all times I'm not in the world.
Stop the video.
Oh, you know what, Shalema? Actually, we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you, but if you stop the video, it sounds like we might be able to hear better.
More bandwidth.
Perfect. Okay.
Hear me now? Is this better?
Yes.
It is better. Okay. All the times I'm not in the Zendo, tonight was one of those times that I wished I had there. In 1968, I was 16 years old, and I grew up in the South. Martin Luther King represented, and he was so powerful in his ability to reach his people, and his ability to dream, to go out and put his life on the line so that we could all be that sense of liberation, freedom, which I kind of feel we've somewhat lost at. You know, I don't feel that connectedness on the level that I speak, I have a dream. And so we have to dream. I don't see a lot of difference between what was happening in 1968 when he did that speech and what's going on today politically. With the immigrants, with all of us, we're kind of separate. So he, you know, it's just, so I am personally where I am today, which is kind of like nowhere, but everywhere, because Martin Luther King had the audacity to step out and present the challenges in the spring happening with Black people, not only in the South, but all over the world. And I think there is more, you know, yes, it was a great speech, but how, you know, it touches me deeply. It touches me deeply because he was so young. I think he was 15. He was 15 years old when he went to Morehouse College in Atlanta. And I believe he was 39 when he was killed. That, to me, is enough for us to get together, band together, to keep the hope alive, to continue to sit, to continue to reach out, to go out. I mean, he talked about poverty, racism, militarism. We're seeing that today in mass what's happening to people. What's happening with us? And even though Martin was this, you know, he was great, I really wish more attention could be talked about, like, who supported him? You know, the mother who sacrificed her husband for the children. You know, like, it's like so much has happened to us as a race of people. And so we, so, you know, how do we feel that? How do we hold on to that and know that we must continue to dream and we must put ourselves out there and do something? What can we do? What, you know, how do we, you know, it's just, yeah. So I'm here today. I'm part of the song because of Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, you know, all the ones that came before Martin. You know, it's just amazing that we have forgotten what to do. We've forgotten. This man offered up his life, and he's not the only one. So we can, so we can feel what liberation is. We have to feel it. And that's what we, that's what Martin is to me. He suggests that there is liberation. So I feel kind of weird because I'm the only African American in the group, I feel like I'm connected to my white colleagues and friends in the Sangha. And it's because of some of the things that Martin said in that one speech. It's like, how do we stop it? We embrace it. We have to embrace all of it to become. I don't want to do a Dharma speech here, but one day I will be doing a Dharma speech, and I hope to have that same tone that Dr. Martin Luther King had to touch people so deeply.
Okay, so we'll. I think we're all looking forward to that talk for sure.
Well, I would. I mean,
thank you.
I'm so excited to say that I grew up in the South. And he was such hope for Black people. And if you have this hope of liberation and freedom for one race of people, You have to know it's for all races of people. We can stop the separation and we can, you know, figure out, sit with it. Call him forth. He's an ancestor.
Thank you.
Call him forth. What can we do?
Thank you.
You know, so I thank you. Thank you.
Thank
all
you.
My blood pressure just.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Is there, thank you, Shalema. And I don't know if there's another group on Zoom that wanted to share, or everyone's been represented. And I think there might be another group in the room.
There's one more on Zoom. I'll go real quick. Daniel.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Mention that she got
And Kokai was supposed to be in our group, but we had the technical difficulties. So,
sorry about that.
Real quick. So first of all, it goes without saying that the speech has direct relevancy to everything that's going on today. And quite frankly, everything that's gone on in the interim 63 years and before then. And I'm sure it's going to have direct relevance for the next eternity, which is the second point. I think that we were all of the same consensus that these were the words of a bodhisattva, and the language, which was where we were most drawn to, the mastery and the poetry of the language is just remarkable. And for us bodhisattvas out there, you think of his focus on the urgency of the now, his talking about tranquility, now is not the time to be tranquil. Creative suffering, some of these themes that came through, and just the entirety of the speech and what does it mean, you know, for me at least, he was talking about we need this political promise fulfilled right here and now. And when he's saying things like, I have a dream over and over, you know, from my perspective, at least, that has to be taken with a great deal of irony, because he starts his speech off by speaking 50 ago, which is a hearkening to the Emancipation Proclamation, or the Gettysburg Address, I'm sorry, 47 years ago. He's talking about the promises that were made with the Declaration of Independence, that the white man at that point in time of 1963 is denying to his brethren, and it's almost taken for granted. And this is the dream that he has, the promise upon which this nation was built. So the way he starts a speech talking about a promissory note, you know, whose language is that he's using, and who's it directed to? It's a banker's language. It's commerce. and then to go into his Southern Baptist preacher's voice and the poetry there, it's just a remarkable, remarkable bodhisattva's speech.
Okay, thank you. And I think the last group is...
Yeah, so... bunch of different themes within our triangle came out. One common one was that comment he made about now is the time. Not accepting complacency, but being really like direct about taking action now. One thing that I latched on to that I mentioned in the group was the quote, "Let us not quench our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of hatred and violence." And I think for me, that is something that obviously a very Buddhist concept, but I think that's something that we still struggle with and have always struggled with. That's always been a struggle in Christian theology too. That was a struggle for the apostles as well, like not judging the people that Jesus was telling them not to judge. And it was really just hard. It's hard not to hate people who are hating. And that's going on now. And that's kind of a result. That's why we have our polarization that we have now. Inability to love people on the opposite side or think differently than us, and not of empathy, but that's one thing he was advocating for. Other theme, when he talked about the white people there, and clearly it was also said from a member in our group too, like it wasn't just about eliminating racism for him, it was about true justice, justice in every facet, and he was moving on to do work towards supporting labor and supporting poverty and eradicating all of that. Just that it was just justice, blanket justice for all, freedom for all. And when he said their freedom is tied to our freedom, that really resonated with me too, the idea that, you know, if you have anyone who is being harmed, it harms all of us. And that, you know, although you might think that to be the racist, you're also enchained by your racism. That enslaves you as much as the one who is enslaved. And I think that's a really deep idea. We think like right now in these current times where people are being persecuted, that we all are being persecuted, even if we're not the ones who aren't directly being pulled out of our homes and sent across the border. It affects all of us, if it affects any of us. And I think that theme is really important and an internal theme that his heart was tied to. And that's why it resonated so much to everybody at the time and still does. But it was a struggle in our group. We were talking about that. It's really, really difficult to not have anger and hatred towards people who are being hurtful and seem to have ill intentions. Just have love for those people too. But I think Martin Luther King Jr. was one who showed that you could do that. You could love your enemies. And he loved them, I feel. So.
Okay. Thank you to everyone for sharing. And we wanted to, I know Clem had something to say, but we wanted to end also with a poem or a statement, I guess, from Martin Luther King. He said, "I want you to be first in love. I want you to be first in moral excellence. I want you to be first in generosity," which I thought was especially nice. And final thing from Clem.
Yeah, I think I ended up being the odd man out here because we didn't evenly divide by three, but I was able to converse with Doralee a little bit. And I wanted to say that to me, what this speech is about, and in fact the entire civil rights movement, it's about the dignity of man and how everyone deserves that. And I did get a quote here, but it's from the letter from Birmingham Jail, and it's a recurring theme where it says, where he said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere."